This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. You can access this show live or as a podcast by going online to kuci.org. This is In the Garden Show, produced by the UC Master Gardeners of Orange County, California. I'm Katrina Kirkby, and I'm here with Tina Spindler. We are your hosts for the hour, and this week's topic is, Tina, what are we talking about this week?
It's April! April in the garden, and what to do in April in the garden.
You know, it's beautiful weather out there.
It is, and oh my goodness, April is such a crazy busy month in the garden, so we're going to have to talk fast on this show today to get all of it in.
I know, there's so much to talk about. Where shall we start?
Well, why don't we start with planting, because April is such an awesome month to plant. Hopefully we got started last month, but if, like me, the month of March flew by and you didn't get everything planted, April is also a fabulous springtime month to plant pretty much everything.
You know, and some of us who did plant last month, we still had stuff coming in from the winter time. So we need to have a little extra space now, and we can keep planting. So it's a good month to plant.
Absolutely, yeah. Especially in our veggie gardens and our flower gardens, some of those winter crops were still producing, and actually still are producing into April. I know I still have some great lettuces and kale and peas and things going. The cool season stuff is still going in my garden. But, you know, slowly but surely you'll get lettuces that bolt, and you'll start removing those, and then it's time for you to plant the warm season plants that we all love, especially tomatoes.
Oh.
And in fact, there are probably a fair number of tomato events that are happening throughout the county this month. So keep your eye out in the newspaper and on your favorite garden websites and nursery websites, because you'll probably see some tomato events that
Absolutely.
Are going on. Yeah.
And now's the time we're planting pretty much tomatoes that are not from seed, but that have already started, correct?
Yeah, I wouldn't start them from seed anymore. You actually can, because in our climate, you know, we get our tomatoes to continue to grow up till December or January when we get a frost. But by and large, if you want to have your tomatoes quickly, you're going to want to start with transplants. And I actually recommend 4-inch transplants rather than 6-packs, mostly because I don't have the room to plant, you know, scads of tomatoes. And if you buy a 6-pack, then you're stuck with 6 tomato plants that are all the same kind, right?
Exactly.
And rather than having 6 early girl tomatoes, I'd rather have 6 different kinds of tomatoes. And that way you need to buy the 4-inch transplants.
Exactly. And speaking of early girls, if you haven't planted yet, plant it early, girl, because you can plant all kinds of tomatoes, but if you plant it early, girl, you're going to have tomatoes early. That's the reason why they named it that. And I can't wait for my first tomatoes. So I don't want to plant a late season tomato to start with. I'll plant it along with something else, but I always plant an early girl.
Yeah, the other thing that's great about early girls in addition to that is it has a great flavor. And so I always plant those because I do like to try other varieties, you know, maybe some new heirlooms or some new hybrids. But I know that early girl has that tried and true flavor. It's also a really good producer because the fruit is not a huge fruit, you know, like the beefsteak tomatoes, mm-hmm. which I love. But kind of a general rule of thumb is the larger the fruit of the tomato, the fewer fruits you get on each plant. So if you want a plant that is going to give you kind of a lot of tomatoes, early girl is one of those good choices because it's a small to medium-sized tomato.
And it produces over a long period of time.
Really long. In fact, I've had the early girls over winter because the other reason that they're called early girls is that they tolerate cold. And so you can plant them and they'll actually, you know, kind of survive into the colder months. They get pretty ugly looking because they get really scraggly, but they're also fairly disease resistant, and that's another reason that I plant those, because, you know, sometimes you plant heirlooms and you're all excited about them, and then we get some really damp, you know, June gloom, and our heirlooms get all kinds of fungal diseases, and then they poop out and you have to yank them out. But the hybrids, like early girl, a lot of them are more disease resistant, and I guess I should mention to folks who are new to buying tomatoes is if you want to see if your tomato is disease resistant, often the plant label will have some initials on it that tell you what things it's resistant to. So do read your labels on the plants that you're buying to see if they're resistant to verticillium wilt or some of the other tomato diseases that are out there.
You know, when I first started gardening, I just knew to buy it when it said the tomato and it had a lot of letters behind it.
Yeah.
The more letters it had behind it, the safer the bet it was.
Exactly.
And I didn't know what all these things were.
Don't need to.
But I knew if I was only going to plant a couple tomatoes, I want something with all those letters because it all affects different things about the health of the tomato.
Right. The disease resistance. And like I said, the heirlooms have great flavors, great colors. They're really fun if you have pretty perfect conditions, but oftentimes they're a little bit more susceptible to disease. So as Katrina said, look for a label that has a whole scads of letters on it.
Scads of letters are good. If you're only going to plant one tomato, you want scads of letters.
Yeah. And then just to wrap up the tomato discussion, do know that there are two broad classes of tomatoes, whether they're heirlooms or hybrids. There are determinate tomatoes and there are indeterminate tomatoes. And the difference between those two are the determinate tomatoes blossom and produce all of their fruit in a really short time frame. So often the tomatoes that are used for canning or the Italian tomatoes are usually determinate plants because you want all those tomatoes kind of at once so that you can make tomato sauce and can them. You don't want them over the whole long season. The indeterminate tomatoes, on the other hand, the plant keeps growing and growing and growing and growing over the whole season and blossoming and blossoming and blossoming, and therefore you get fruit over the whole season.
Now, how I remember it is I always remember determinate. It means a determinate amount of time.
There you go.
And it's great if you want to start canning and putting a whole bunch away for the winter, but if you're only going to have one tomato plant, you want it not to all happen in 1 week.
Because you don't want to eat that many tomatoes.
You can't eat that many tomatoes in 1 week. So I personally like a lot of indeterminate, and then I can have a little bit of this one and that one and enough to give to friends. But if I'm on vacation and I have a determinate, they could be gone by the time I get home.
Exactly. All falling off the vine because you weren't there to pick them. So, yeah. So one more thing before we leave tomatoes is I started doing this a couple years ago. I don't know if you do it, Katrina, but I really, really like it. Because as I was mentioning, your tomatoes, if they're indeterminate, will keep growing and growing, and so you better have a good trellising system. Otherwise, they're going to get totally out of control. And so one of the trellising systems that a fellow master gardener demonstrated and I learned out at the Farm and Food Lab garden at the Gray Park is they took concrete reinforcing wire and actually made a trellis by attaching a length of it to two of the poles that you use to stake trees with, mm-hmm. you know, those nice mm-hmm. tall tree poles. And then you just, you know, as long as your tomato bed is, you unroll, because that concrete reinforcing wire actually comes in rolls. So say that you're, like my beds are 8 feet long, I get 2 4-foot lengths of that concrete reinforcing wire, and then I just zip tie the ends of that concrete reinforcing wire to the poles on either end. And then I actually trellis my tomatoes horizontally, like an espaliered fruit tree. And that way, it doesn't take up, you know, a huge amount of space and use up my entire raised bed. I can then plant in front of the tomatoes some additional things, you know, some bush beans or peppers or eggplant or whatever else that's lower growing can go in front of those tomatoes.
Do you know we have the same system? I've tried a lot of different systems, and it's easy. You know, it's like it's not so thick where you miss things in the middle of the plant, where it's you could see it from both sides. You can plant other things. You could
good
put
air
it up,
circulation.
Great air circulation. You could put it up in the summertime, and it's easy to take down for the wintertime. But it's not for small beds. It's really not for a really small bed or for a pot, but it's for something, if you have, like Tina said, 8-foot beds, those work really well. I would say probably a minimum of 4 foot. I would probably
4 foot,
do,
probably, yeah.
Yeah, 4 foot would be a minimum, but they're wonderful. They have absolute, I think that's, we now do that every year, and it's tried and true, and it works really well.
It does. If, however, you like your tomato plants to you know, just kind of grow as these big full bushes. Another way that you can use the concrete reinforcing wire is to just shape it into a cylinder.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually makes, I think, a better cage for your tomato than a traditional tomato cage, because the tomato cages just flat out are not going to be big enough to support your tomatoes once they get beyond their initial growth.
Especially if you get the larger tomatoes. You know, we're not talking patio tomatoes here. We're talking about the larger indeterminate tomatoes. They
keep
can
going.
Get big.
They do. And the nice thing about the concrete reinforcing wire is the openings in it are big enough that you can get your hands through to pick the fruit.
Exactly.
So, and it's relatively inexpensive at a big box retailer. So, and then I keep saying one last thing, but then I think of one more last thing. So one more last thing about tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Katrina, do you prune your tomatoes, the side shoots?
Oh, yes. Tell us, and that's been a wonderful thing. That
I'm
not sure if I learned that from you or not, Tina.
Maybe.
Tell us about that.
Maybe we talked about it last year on the show, but yeah, when I did start trellising the tomatoes horizontally, then I really noticed that in the where the big leaves join the main stem, there's always some new branches of the tomato plant that come out from those junctions. And I had always just let them grow, and that's why the tomatoes turned into these, you know, giant unruly, you know, creations, because there were these new branches from
everywhere.
And what I read, or someone told me, now I can't remember, but in any event, if you trim those side branches and just leave the main stem, or maybe kind of two main stems, then a couple of things happen. One, the fruit that you produce is going to be of a much bigger size, because the energy is going into the production of those tomatoes, up to the point, you know, all tomatoes are bred to be a certain size. But what will happen is you'll get a bigger tomato. You may have fewer, but they're going to be bigger, and you're going to have a much more healthy and less unruly tomato plant by giving it a little pruning. So is that your experience
when
you've done it? Yeah.
And it also, it takes it off the bottom, so it has a little bit of more room at the bottom. You know, it's just not quite as many things that are coming out.
Right, and not quite as many to try and control and put in a trellis or keep in a cage. It gives you a little bit more control over that plant, instead of letting it take over your entire garden, as they are wont to do.
Sometimes I love it.
Okay, so now we're really going to leave tomatoes, okay? We really will. And instead, let's just finish up the veggie gardening. In April, of course, you want to continue to plant. We started in March, but you want to continue in April doing your plantings of all warm season veggies, and that includes corn and peppers and eggplant and green beans and any of the squashes, cucumber and pumpkins and, gosh, what else?
Oh,
tell me
God.
What I'm forgetting.
You're naming all
cantaloupe, melons,
everything.
All of that stuff. So those plants all like warm weather, and you want to plant them starting in March and going through till, you know, June-ish. And then maybe hopefully you're done by June, because you want the plants to have time to produce their fruit before the weather turns cold in November. So try and get all your planting done in by June, I would say, for those
exactly.
warm veggies.
And we start planting, and then we'll plant every 2 weeks.
Absolutely.
And I think it works really well for us, because I don't want to eat everything at one time.
Especially with like green beans, right?
Yeah. And every 2 weeks or every 3 weeks, whatever works for your family, because I want to have a constant supply of different kind of vegetables. I just don't want to get all my green beans at one time. I like to have some now and a couple weeks and a few weeks from there. So that has worked really, really well for us.
I agree.
You know, I used to get real excited and just plant out all the beds. And that all of a sudden everything produced, and it was too much food for my neighborhood to eat.
And then they start running the other way when they see you.
And then we ran out. So if we kind of do that 2 week thing, buy a little bit now. I know you have to use some self control. Buy a little now, a little couple weeks, and a little bit more. And also, what I suggest is plant what you like to eat.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, yes.
You know, there's so many people that plant stuff they really don't like to eat, and if you don't like peppers, don't plant a lot of peppers. You know, we enjoy peppers, and we enjoy different kinds of peppers, so we plant those. But if that's not your thing, don't plant them.
Right.
Or don't plant a lot of them.
Right. yeah, no, absolutely. Only plant what you like to eat. There's, you know, most of us are short on space anyway, so you want to devote that precious space to stuff that you like.
And then we also plant some hot peppers, and then I dehydrate them.
Oh,
you know,
very
so I
cool.
chop them up and dehydrate them after we have them, and then I have them all winter long.
Yeah, that's
you know,
great.
Why buy them from the store? And I could have mild ones or hotter ones when I'm cooking. And
yeah,
it works out real well.
Yeah, and just for folks who might be new to gardening, I know I love having all the greens like lettuce and spinach and kale in the garden, and you can plant those in April. But just be aware that when it starts getting hot in mid-July, when we get past our June gloom days, that your lettuces will bolt by then. But one thing that has lasted for me throughout the summer is kale.
Yeah.
So if you want to have greens that will tolerate the heat of summer, for the most part, you could give kale a try. It's a little more heat tolerant than the lettuces and spinach.
You know, I live a bit more inland than you do, and
yeah.
we've had wonderful experience with kale. We've had some aphids that we have to pay attention to and some critters. But if you pay attention to them, we've pretty much have kale all year long.
Yeah, me too.
It's wonderful.
It's my new favorite vegetable
for
the last couple of years.
We have it all the time. And it's I go anywhere, I just make a kale salad, and people are impressed. You know,
You
pick the leaves, chop it up, throw some stuff in it. And like, you made that?
And that's key, too, I think, for folks who aren't used to eating kale or growing kale, is I find that the salads are a lot tastier if you really chop the kale up. Because it is kind of a coarse, thicker mm-hmm. leaf. It's not as tender as lettuce. And so what I like to do is cut out those stiff interstems
mm-hmm.
That are in the middle of the leaf. And then I just stack the leaves, and I use a kitchen scissors to julienne slice the leaves real thin. And then I actually dress it about 15 minutes before we're going to eat it, because unlike lettuces, which will then wilt and, you know, be kind of soggy if you dressed them that early, kale actually will absorb a little bit of the dressing and become a little more tender
and
more palatable.
You know what else I do, Tina? I do exactly the same thing. I cut out that middle vein because it's bitter.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a little too much, and it takes a little time to cut that out, but it's so worth it. But then I cut it like you do, but then I also squeeze it.
Oh, a kale massage.
I give it a massage, and it kind of breaks it down a bit.
That's so cool. And I haven't thought to do that.
I think it's macerate. Is that the correct
macerate?
Word? Macerate.
Macerate.
You macerate it, and then you put on the dressing about 15 or 20 minutes ahead of time. And that's, I think a chef taught me that one.
Wow.
And it does make a difference.
See, that's why I love to do this show, is because we learn things from each other.
Exactly.
That's so cool.
And what else is nice is kale lasts, if you pick a lot of it and you have too much for the salad, I put in a Ziploc baggie before I put the dressing on it and put everything, and maybe a paper towel, and it lasts quite a while in the refrigerator, a lot longer than lettuce.
Well, I do something else even, which is kind of funny. I do this with my herbs too. So because the kale has that thick stem,
mm-hmm.
What I do is I trim the stem again when I get inside the house, and I put it in a vase or a glass of water,
mm-hmm.
and I have a kale bouquet sitting on the counter, and it doesn't last quite as long as it would in the refrigerator, but my refrigerator is usually a disaster area and packed to the gills, so I did this purely by necessity because there was no room. And discovered that just like when I cut parsley or basil or other herbs, you know, I often make an herb bouquet, mm-hmm. put it in water, and then I can use those herbs for the next couple of days while I'm cooking. And the kale lasts the same way. Yeah,
I think
so. It's kind of fun.
It's been wonderful, and especially those with us busy schedules that are trying to prep for the week. You know, if you're doing it on Saturday and Sunday, that kale will last.
Yeah, it does.
You know, it's a nice one to last. We can go quite a bit later and pull it out, and
there
you go. You got a salad.
So, yeah. Eat your kale. It's good for you. And easy to grow, too. Really easy.
And I also like growing different kinds of kale.
I know. You grow. So I only grow one kind because I have tried others, but I have my one favorite kind. But I know you grow some really interesting ones.
What's your favorite?
I like blue curly kale.
Okay.
Yeah. The reason I like it is it lasts the longest in my garden.
Yeah.
And so it grows. I mean, I've had plants last for a year until the aphids, you know, took over, and I wasn't on top of the aphids. But, that blue curly kale will last for a really long time.
Got to try cosmic kale.
Cosmic kale. That's the pretty one.
It's yes, it's real pretty. It's green with some like white color, almost white tips on it.
Yeah.
It's a lot mellower in taste.
Right.
And when you're mixing several kales together, the salad looks really pretty because you get the curly ones and then you get the alligator ones and then you get the cosmic ones. And it's a pretty thing to look at.
Yeah.
If you have room, try it.
Yeah. So lots of hints about kale. So the other thing you're going to want to do in your veggie garden, we kept alluding to the aphids on the kale. And this isn't just in your veggie garden. This is going to be true for your whole garden in April because as well as the garden waking up, all of the insects are waking up too. So you do need to really keep an eye out and treat infestations early.
And how do you treat them, Tina?
Well, we want you to practice integrated pest management, or IPM for short. And that's a big fancy phrase that just means we want you to use the least toxic method that you can for controlling your pests. And my favorite one for controlling snails in the veggie garden, because my veggie garden is 3 big raised beds, so it's, you know, pretty easy to see what's going on. And my favorite snail control is to pick them off the plant and stomp on them with my foot.
Yes.
It's so satisfying.
Another side of you, Tina.
So no poisons in the veggie garden. For snails, there are some other things that you can do. There are some organic snail baits, the iron phosphate snail baits you can use. You can also pay children a dime for every snail they find and, you know, have them stomp on them or throw them in the trash can. Another thing that you can do is put out old tubes from your paper towel rolls.
Mm-hmm.
And the snails don't like the sun, so if you lay those out in the garden, they'll crawl inside them to get away from the sun. And then all you have to do is pick up the tube, throw it in the trash. That's always kind of cool. Or you can take a little piece of, say you had a piece of 2x4 or 1x6 wood. Mm-hmm. You can lean it on a rock, and it does the same thing as the paper towel tubes, provides shade. And the snails will crawl under there, and then lo and behold, you pick up the piece of wood, and you have all these snails stuck to the bottom of it, and you can just scrape them off into the trash can. So there's a lot of, you know, what we call physical controls that you can do. Another physical control for the aphids in your veggie garden is to get one of those brass hose nozzles, mm-hmm. the ones that you can have a real direct stream of water, you know, by twisting the nozzle, and you just squirt the aphids off. You squirt them off the kale, squirt them off your roses. Wherever you see aphids, they're really pretty stupid, and you just give them a squirt, and they fall down. And if you do that for a couple of days, then you'll control your aphid population. Because they seem to be too stupid to come back to where they were.
I don't think they can they?
I don't know, but they never seem
to. You spray them off. It's amazing how well that works. It's a hose. People say, just spray them off, and I'm like, it works really well.
Or if you have your garden gloves on, you can actually rub them off. You know, you just like I run my 2 fingers along the stem of roses, you know, when they're on the stems of the roses, and I just kind of smush them off. But that's might not be real pleasant if you had bare fingers or just for some people in general who maybe were a little squeamish. But that's another physical way of controlling. And then, of course, you know, your first step is to always, and this is what Tina never does, but always plant your plants at the appropriate distance apart. Don't do like I do. I always try to cram in, you know, one more tomato or one more whatever. And when you do that and compromise the air circulation, then you're going to have more pests and disease. So always start out by planting things appropriately and keeping them watered, because I was so surprised when I became a master gardener and I found out that stressed plants actually attract insects. Wasn't that amazing when you found that out?
Isn't it kind of like how when you're stressed, you have more likely to have disease?
Exactly.
Same thing with plants.
Your little immune system is not
weakened.
So strong. Yeah,
it's weakened. So don't overwater, but make sure they're happy.
That they're not stressed. And then finally, as a last resort, if you have an infestation that these other more moderate means aren't controlling, then take a picture of it and send it to our hotline, which Katrina is.
It's hotline, HOTELINE at ngorange.ucanr.edu.
And if you send a picture, if you don't know what the bug or the disease is, if you send a picture to our hotline, a master gardener will research your specific question and get you back a personalized answer. Or if you want to do a little research yourself, if you're that kind of person and you just really like to learn things, I recommend that you go to our UCIPM website, because it is like having an entire horticulture library at your hands, because it doesn't only identify pests for you, but it tells you about how to grow things. So there's all sorts of cultural, what we call cultural tips on how to successfully grow different plants. And the website's super easy to use. You just, first of all, click on home and garden as opposed to agriculture, because you'll be wanting home and garden answers. And then you just click on the type of plant that you're interested in, you know, whether it's turf if you have lawn issues, or shrubs if you have shrub issues, or flowers or veggies. And you'll be able to do some research on your own. There are actually pictures of the disease and the insects and the damage. So that's kind of fun to look at the pictures and say, that's the bad guy that's in my garden, and then click on it and it'll give you solutions for it.
Exactly. And if you're driving around and you can't remember all this, you could always Google UC Master Gardeners, Orange County, California. And you'll get to our page, and on our page is our website number, our hotline number, and lots of information. So just UC Master Gardeners, Orange County, California, and Google that and you'll get there.
Yes, and there's a link to the Integrated Pest Management website on our Orange County Master Gardener.
The hotline
website
will be there, the website's there, the link is there, and a lot of other good information.
Right.
And our podcast of the show will be there.
Absolutely. You can click on our podcast of all of our shows anytime so that you can listen, as I do when I'm doing laundry or cleaning the house. That's a great time to have something to distract me from those chores, to listen to our shows.
We have a lot of people listen doing chores. Yeah. I think that's great.
It is. Okay, well, how are we doing?
Well, you know,
We
need to identify ourselves. So in case anybody doesn't know who we are, this is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. There we go. We're identified.
Cool.
What should we talk about now? There's so much to talk about.
I think we did justice to the veggies, although we do have a tomato show. If you go to our website and click on the tomato show, you'll get a lot more info about tomatoes.
Yes.
And also we have one on warm season veggies. So if you want more info, you can do that. But I think because April is such a great time to plant, should we talk about what to plant elsewhere in the garden?
Yes, yes. There's other things besides vegetables, right?
Yes. So first thing I'd like to say is that April's probably the last month that you want to plant natives or drought-tolerant stuff.
Ooh, yeah, we're pushing it now.
We're pushing it now. But if you have a few more that you want to get in, do it the first part of the month. We're going to start getting, you know, our bits and pieces of heat waves, and those plants kind of go dormant in the summer. They don't grow as vigorously. We actually encourage you to start planting them in October all through the winter so they can get those winter rains. But if you still have a few spots that you need to fill in, do it the first part of this month if you can. Then next, I'm just going to go through like a whole list of things. Pretty much you can plant everything in April.
Yes.
Okay, so end of show. No. But here's a couple of ones that are especially cool to plant in April, and one of them is azaleas. And the reason it's good to plant azaleas this time of year is because they're in bloom, and you'll get to see exactly what the colors are of the plants that you're planting.
Isn't that nice to know what you're getting in the garden for sure?
For sure. So do azaleas. The other reason to plant them is, this is crazy when I first learned this, azaleas are dormant when they're blooming. How bizarre is that? They're less actively growing when they're not totally dormant, obviously, but they're somewhat dormant when they bloom. And so they actually have, you know, we like to plant things when they're dormant because they don't go in transplant shock as easily, right? So, who knew? I never knew that till I became a master gardener. Kind of crazy, huh? The other thing to know about azaleas is that they like acidic soil by and large, and most azaleas want to have a little bit of protection from the sun. So there are what they call sun azaleas and shade azaleas. So first of all, make sure you look at the spot where you're going to plant them and choose the appropriate one.
The appropriate type of azalea. And
exactly.
They usually have them separated at the nursery.
Yep.
But also when you get there, I was at the nursery the other day and somebody had set down one in the other one's place.
Oh, dear.
Yes. So make sure you, I really like this one. And it was the wrong one for the amount of sun I got. So we didn't get it, and I went and put it back to where it belonged. But make sure, look at the label. Make sure it's the partial sun or the sun or the shade one.
Yeah, always look at the label of everything.
Everything.
If you can, yeah. The other thing that I don't have, but I know you have one, I'm lusting after it, is the wisteria are in bloom right now.
Oh, my goodness.
And Chris, Katrina has one, and I've always wanted one, but I don't.
Oh, my God.
They're in bloom now, so if you're going to plant them now so you know what you're getting.
So you know what you're getting, and they're absolutely beautiful. I have one that's growing up an overhang deck.
Oh, that's where you want it.
It's growing up from like a story below, and then it's growing onto the deck, and now it's growing through the railing of the deck.
Ah,
and it's just beautiful, and it smells gorgeous.
Oh,
and
it's
just so lovely. I've always wanted a wisteria.
How long ago did you plant it?
Oh, I planted it several years ago. And, you know, it was this little thing, and it's just grown. But you got to watch it while it's growing, because sometimes I've let it get carried away. But it is just beautiful. But you have to have room for it.
They turn out to be big plants.
They turn out to be big, but they look soft and lovely. It's just like grace in your garden.
Yeah, if you have a place for a vine, like Katrina said, over a trellis or along a railing,
and it gives
they're
you,
amazing.
And if you need sun, if you have a place, mine doesn't affect where I have it as far as shading us, because it's going from down below to up, and it's just a beautiful thing to look at. But it's something that could give you shade in the summer, you know, with beautiful flowers, and then it gives you this more light in the wintertime.
Yeah, because it's deciduous, so
yes.
It drops its leaves.
It drops its leaves.
And so you don't have to worry about it shading things in the winter if you're wanting some sun in the winter.
Yeah. Yeah. Just real pretty. I'm just really happy with it. It's one of those ones that I wasn't sure about. I didn't know how it would grow in my yard. And,
yeah.
And now I'm having a party, and it's out there dancing. It's just
beautiful.
Well, this
is, you plan your parties around when the wisteria blooms, right?
Oh, sure.
Come now. It's in bloom. Another thing that I like to plant, and I plant these every year, and some of them overwinter, are dahlias.
I
love flowers. And so there's all different kinds of dahlias in terms of the shape of the flower. Some will have little flowers, like the pom-pom dahlias. They only get like an inch and a half across or so. And then, of course, there's the dinner plate dahlias, which are just spectacular.
Those are my favorite.
Almost, 10 inches across or something like that?
Oh, I love them.
Yeah, yeah. As big as a head, as your head. They're just stunning flowers. So now is the time to plant those. And in case you didn't know, the dahlias are tubers, and they come like in a little plastic bag, and there will be a little label on it that shows you and tells you what kind of dahlia it is. But you plant them from tubers, and they're actually, you know, cheaper, because you usually get like three of them in a bag for, you know, $7.99 or $8.99. And you'd pay that much for just one in a gallon pot if you bought it when it was already growing.
Great deal.
So dahlias, that's another one.
And you know what about another thing about the dahlias
is
that they're nice if you have a small place, you know, you don't need to have large blooms. But my yard, I have a big yard, and sometimes I lose small things in my yard.
Mm.
And when I look out, the small things just disappear, and those big dinner plate dahlias will pop, and you can see them from a long distance.
You can, and that reminds me, one of the best displays I ever saw was actually in a pot of the dinner plate dahlias, and somebody had a large pot, and they put a dinner plate dahlia in the center of the pot, and then they followed the thriller, filler, spiller technique of planting pots, which means you put something tall and bold and colorful in the center, and then you plant something that's medium size around the edges, and then at the very edges you plant something that's going to spill over the edge of the pot. So this display I saw had a brilliant a yellow dinner plate dahlia, you know, in, mm-hmm. in the center of the pot. And then it had the medium-sized orange marigolds kind of as the filler. Mm-hmm. And then it had the dark blue lobelia as the spiller. Oh. And also, I think, alyssum, white alyssum. And so you just had this, it looked like this bouquet.
How big of a pot was it?
It was probably, I didn't do it, so it was probably a pretty good sized pot. I would say maybe 18 to 20 inches yeah. apart, because the dinner plate dahlias get like 3-4 feet tall,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, but that's why this was so magnificent. And then they didn't use the little marigolds. They used those marigolds that get to be about 24 inches tall. So you had, you know, this 3-4 foot dinner plate dahlia, then these bright orange, you know, 18 to 24 inch marigolds in it, and then the spiller, you know, plants over the edge. And boy, talk about, it was at a botanical garden, actually.
Of course.
Talk about knocking your socks off, you know. It was stunning. So another way to use dahlias, even if you don't have a big yard, put them in pots.
Pots. They're great in pots.
Yeah.
And, then, you know, like as you're coming to the front door, put dahlias by, you could lining them up. If you get enough sun, put them by your front door. You can move your dahlias around that way.
Oh, yeah.
They're really pretty.
And the other thing, too, about, you either in the ground or pots, but especially in pots, because we tend to change our pots out, you know, seasonally. When you plant a dahlia, you're still going to end up with the tuber. So when you're ready to switch out the warm season plants in, say, November, October, or November, save that tuber and store it in some, you know, dry peat moss over the winter, and then you've got it to replant again the next year. And you can probably even, the tuber will probably have gotten bigger, so you can probably even cut it into, you know, two or three pieces and have three new dahlias come.
And you could share it.
And you can share it.
And you can share it. I've gotten my dahlias out of my second mom's yard, and she's always part of my yard.
Aww.
Because her dahlias came. My dahlias came from her yard.
Those are the best plants ever.
Yeah.
Passed down plants.
Passed down plants.
Yeah.
An easy one to pass down.
Exactly. Let's see. What else was I going to talk about planting? Geraniums. I like to plant geraniums and pelargoniums, which we think of as commonly called geraniums, but there's actually two classes of plants called pelargoniums and geraniums. And the reason I love to plant those now is, A, they like warm weather, and B, they're blooming. And so you can see what you're getting, you know. So, and those are, you know, goodness, our grandmas, our moms, you know, we all grew up with them. And for a while I would look down my nose at them. But the older and lazier I get, the more I like them, because they bloom like nobody's business.
I agree. I thought they were old lady plants. And then I'm like, oh, dear, what am I now? And I thought hydrangeas were old lady plants. I love hydrangeas.
Oh, we're not going to tell anyone how old we are, Katrina, because it's radio and no one can see us.
This is good. This is really good.
Okay, a couple more things to talk about. How much time do we have left here?
20 minutes.
Okay, cool. So let's talk about roses, because usually you get your first big flush of bloom on your roses in April.
Mine are coming.
I've got buds.
You got buds?
Yeah. So... And I think that the first bloom is always the best. It's just, I don't know. The roses don't have any diseases yet. And
you're excited.
You're excited. And so that first bloom of the roses is just always really fun, I think. But we don't want them to end with their first flush of bloom. So when they bloom in April, and if they bloom early in April and they're, you know, they're done with their first flush of bloom by the end of the month, be sure you deadhead them. And you want to deadhead them and make that cut at an outward-facing five-leaf leaflet on the plant. And then after they have that bloom flush, you want to fertilize them. And that's pretty much what you want to do all throughout the blooming season, is they tend to bloom in these big flushes, and then you deadhead them, and the plant doesn't have much going on. So you give it a little food, and then a few weeks later, you'll have another big, big bloom again.
And it really is that simple. And Tina does it year after year. She makes it really simple. And she has the most stunning roses. And they are just gorgeous.
Thank you. And also, I don't, other than spraying with a dormant spray when I prune them in January, I really don't spray them. So mine do get, you know, some aphids, or they might get a little rust or, you know, black spot if we have real damp weather. But I just keep, you know, when I deadhead them, if there are leaves that are infected with some of the fungal diseases, I just, you know, try and trim them off and throw them away. And you do want to throw them away. You don't want to compost them because you don't want to spread that fungal disease.
Exactly.
So, but, you know, just keep your plants watered. You know, try to water them early in the day so that the water has a chance to dry out when the sun comes up and not overnight have wet leaves. So, you know, and tolerate a little imperfection. Your roses don't have to be totally perfect, you know. When you cut them and you bring them in the house, take off those leaves that are damaged and stick them in a vase.
And we are always so much more critical of our yards, our personal yards, than other people are.
Yeah.
You know, well, if you have roses growing, most people don't. You know, so it's a gift, and giving somebody a few roses from your garden is really nice, or flowers from your garden.
You know, the best hostess gift I ever got was I had a dinner party, and this lovely woman brought me a bouquet of everything that was blooming in her garden. And so it was so appreciated. I mean, she had things like bougainvillea, you know, leaves, and geraniums, and, you know, just and roses and other things that you think of as cutting flowers. But she put stuff in there that was not, you know, technically a cutting flower. You know, parts of the bouquet only lasted for that night. But I was so thrilled that she basically gave me a piece of her entire garden. And it was so think about that when you go places. You know, we often stop at the market and, you know, Trader Joe's or wherever, and grab a bouquet of flowers. But if you have stuff blooming in your yard, take that instead.
Take it. You know, I had a friend come and visit, staying with us, and she went picking. And she did the same thing, things that I'd never picked.
In your yard.
In my yard.
In your own yard.
Even the greens that she picked. I'm like, I never thought about that. And they were dark and lush, and they had color to them. And she made this bouquet, and it was like, I'm stuck in my little box where I think what should be flowers,
right,
and what should be in a vase. And she really got me out of that by just pulling from here and there, and it was stunning.
The other people who...
She found stuff in my garden I didn't know.
Didn't know you had, yeah.
Yeah, I knew I had, but I thought it belonged on a plant, right, not in my vase.
The other people who will get you out of your box is one of my favorite things to do if I have people visiting who have small children, is I give them, depending on their age, either scissors or clippers or the rounded safety scissors, and I let them go and choose anything they want in the garden. And the bouquets the kids make, talk about original, you know, they'll go out and they'll pick off strawberries to put in their bouquet. Why not?
Isn't it fun?
Yeah, they come really back fun. With. Yeah, so anyway, be creative, enjoy your whole garden, and bring it inside so you can enjoy it inside too.
Right, you should see, we're talking about flowers and Tina's just blooming right here.
Oh, I love this time of year, and I go out in my garden, and, you know, I have a ton of perennials because my garden's too big to replant everything every season, and you forget what you have, right? And so you walk out there, and it's like, oh, wow, that's so cool that, you know, the whatever are blooming right now. Or I forget I put daffodils in a certain area, and lo and behold, there's, you know, daffodils in the front yard I totally forgot I had put out there. So
wonderful surprises.
Yeah, good surprises. The other thing, though, that you should be doing, so we talked about planting. That was a huge thing you need to do. Talked about pest control because the pests are going to be going crazy. The other thing you need to do is feed, because everything's growing like crazy.
They're hungry.
And so be sure you fertilize virtually everything. The one piece of advice that we will give you, though, about fertilizing is do pay attention to the type of plant that you're fertilizing and get the right kind of fertilizer for it. For instance, if you are growing plants that fruit, like tomatoes, you don't want to give them a fertilizer that has too much nitrogen in it. And just to refresh everybody's memory, every package of fertilizer has three numbers on it, and the first number is nitrogen, and that makes green growth. The second number is phosphorus, and that helps flowering and fruiting. And the third number is potassium, and that helps with root development and overall plant health. So if you're planting things that are flowering and fruiting, you don't want to have a fertilizer that has a high first number, because that would be nitrogen, and then what you're going to get is mostly green growth.
12-foot tomatoes.
12-foot tomatoes, or a rose bush that is amazingly lush and has very few flowers.
Oh, so what you're saying is, if it's spending time growing, it's not spending time producing
blooming,
flowers.
Blooming, yes. So the numbers, for instance, for bloomers would have a high middle number. So you would want, if it was an organic fertilizer, it would probably be something like 3, 5, you know, 2 or something like that. Whereas if you were growing, if you were fertilizing grass or lettuce, you would want high nitrogen, the nitrogen number to be higher. So you might want that one to be, you know, 6, 3, 2 or something like that. So the other thing you can do is just cheat. And or if you're sending, you know, your kid, or in my case, my husband, who doesn't know anything about gardening, to Home Depot or someplace to buy you something, is tell them to get vegetable fertilizer or rose fertilizer. And then you don't really have to, you know, worry about what the numbers say.
You know, that's really easy, too. You know, yeah. We have busy lives, so some of us, it's just easy to pick it up, and you can't go wrong.
And there are fertilizers with all kinds of formulations. So there's citrus fertilizer. And, you know, why not? If you're going to fertilize your citrus tree, make it easy on yourself. Choose the citrus fertilizer. It probably also has micronutrients in addition to the 3 main nutrients that citrus trees want, you know. So it isn't a bad. In fact, I even found, I don't know if you've ever seen this, I actually found bougainvillea fertilizer.
I have never seen that.
I actually found that, and I gave it to my bougainvillea last year. I'm going to look for it again this year. And they never looked so good.
Really?
So
I have bougainvillea.
There's apparently some, you know, micronutrient, and I can't remember what it is, but there was something in that formulation that Katrina's taking notes.
I'm taking notes.
She's going to go look for some bougainvillea fertilizer.
I have like 5 bougainvilleas, so 6 bougainvilleas.
So do the easy thing and look for the fertilizer that is specific to your plant. And so as a result, I actually, this time of year, normally I just buy an all-purpose fertilizer because I can't, you know, be bothered having 26 different kinds of fertilizer. But this time of year is the one exception, because I know I'm going to be fertilizing, you know, my citrus, I get citrus fertilizer, because I know I'm going to be fertilizing my roses, I get rose fertilizer, you know, and so on and so forth. And of course, you know, you use it up pretty quickly if you have a big yard like I do. So, but the rest of the year, I just get kind of an all-purpose, you know. An all-purpose means the numbers are pretty even. So it would be like 4-4-4 or 4-5-4, something like that. So feed.
Feed. They're hungry. How about the lawns?
Lawns too, absolutely. I just fed my lawn in March. It's a warm season lawn. I mean, it's a cool season lawn. My lawn is a cool season lawn. And so I will probably feed it once more before summer, and then I won't feed it, because the cool season lawns struggle a bit in the hot weather. And the moral of the story for feeding is, you want to feed when things are vigorously growing. And so you don't want to feed... Not that we feed our native plants a lot anyway, but if you were going to give drought tolerance a little bit of feeding, you wouldn't do it in the summertime, because they're not actively growing as much in the summer. And the same with the cool season lawn. You know, they are actively growing when the weather is cooler, and so that's when you want to feed them, is when the weather's before it gets really hot.
It's a good thing to remember.
Yeah.
Makes it easy.
Yeah.
Well, where should we go from here?
Well, we should probably talk a bit about watering.
Oh, yes.
Because it's we're blessed to have so much good rain this year, but March was pretty dry, and so I know I turned on my sprinklers again in about mid-March.
I did the same.
Yeah, and so we need to pay attention to that, because, you know, right now I have mine coming on twice a week, but not for very long, because, you know, it's just not that warm yet. But as the days get a little warmer, I will be extending and cycling my irrigation. And that just means that I'll have, instead of, like right now I only have one cycle coming on for like, you know, maybe 3 to 5 minutes, depending on the station. But as it gets hotter, I will change that so that my sprinklers actually come on twice. And I maybe will have them come on for 2 3-minute cycles or 2 2-minute cycles twice a week. And then when the weather gets super hot, you know, I may go to 3 days a week for those cycles. But the reason that I do the cycles is so that the water has a chance to soak in.
Yeah, it really makes a big difference.
Yeah. And I know Katrina's the water miser at her house, so...
You know, my deal is I get to keep my hydrangea if I keep my water bill in the low level.
That's right.
So I'm mindful about my water.
Yeah.
And my sprinklers and how I use it. And the word runoff is not in our vocabulary. There's
no.
I don't have runoff. I don't know. I haven't seen runoff in years.
We don't want that.
But
that's bad.
But I can have plants.
You know,
if I'm mindful, I can keep my lawn.
It's true. Katrina and I both kept our lawns. But you know what? Our poor lawns ended up with a few brown spots.
Well, mine have a few more than yours.
And we just wait till winter and then we, you know, scatter some new seed and fix the brown spots. And the lawn, you know, may not look super lush. It may look, you know, a little wilted, but we're giving it just enough water so that it doesn't die. So we
exactly.
can keep those lawns, 'cause, you know, for a good chunk of the year. They do fine.
Yeah, I turned my sprinklers off, I think it was the end of October, and I just turned them on a couple weeks ago now.
I did the same thing, probably that first set of big storms we had in early November, and
yeah.
that's when I turned mine off.
I saw the 10-day forecast, they were coming.
Yeah.
Turned off those sprinklers.
So the moral of the story is you can have gardens, you know, drought-tolerant plants. California-friendly plants, as we like to call them, are a great idea. But I still have my roses, and roses are actually fairly drought-tolerant because they have really deep roots.
And when I talk about my hydrangeas, I used to have 7, and now I have 3. But they get the bucket of water from the kitchen. You know, that kind of just makes up for it. And the bucket of water from the shower, and they get a little extra water. And that's what I choose to do. Some people don't want to do that. You know? But if I didn't do that, they would be dead.
I still have 2 hydrangeas as well, and they're on the shady side of my house, and so they don't dry out that fast, and the water that I have keeps them going. Yeah.
Wonderful.
So, we just have to be more mindful than we used to be with water, but it doesn't mean we still can't have fun in our gardens.
Any last-minute things? Our time is almost up, Fina.
I guess the only other thing that I would suggest that folks do is look for garden tours. April is the month of garden tours.
Oh, there's so many out there.
And keep an eye in your local paper or just Google garden tours. The only one I know of the specific date for is the one that my garden is on, which is the Mary Lou Hurd garden tour, which is the weekend of May 6th and 7th. So that's a fun one. It's free. It doesn't cost any money, but it does benefit a woman's shelter. So there are donation jars at each home if folks are so inclined. But I love garden tours because they give you great ideas for your own garden.
And there's garden tours all over Orange County. I know there's one in Santa Ana that's quite popular. There's lots of. I think Tustin had one. I don't know if they're doing it this year.
Sherman Gardens always has one as a fundraiser to support that public garden. So just look. There's several.
It's fun.
There's several schools that you know that use them as fundraisers, so you can get to see some, you know, cool houses and cool gardens throughout the county.
I personally like to start early. But not everybody's early on the weekend because they want to sleep in and relax. But that's my thing because I get out and see everything before the traffic's out and people are out.
And also, I've noticed some people have refreshments. And so if you go early, you get the refreshments.
Oh, how nice is that?
So, anyway.
Well, with that, I think we're going to wrap up. I thank everybody for listening to us. And Tina, thank you always for your knowledge and wisdoms and fun about learning about gardening. And until next week. We hope you have a joyous week.
Happy gardening!